In Berkeley, I'm Amanda Bellerby. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. On July 14th and 15th, Israeli jets sent two missiles slamming into the power station at Jie, Lebanon, 18 miles south of Beirut. As a result, some 15,000 tons of heavy, viscous fuel oil spilled into the Mediterranean Sea. 6 weeks later, the oil slick has spread almost 100 miles north and is now threatening the coasts of Turkey and Syria. This is the largest environmental disaster in the history of the region. Rick Steiner is a professor at the University of Alaska and a member of the IUCN, also called the World Conservation Union, Commission on Environmental, Economic, and Social Policy. He traveled to Lebanon at the request of the Lebanese Ministry of Environment and other organizations to conduct a rapid assessment of the oil spill and returned to his home in Alaska a few days ago. He joins us by phone from Anchorage. Professor Steiner, welcome to Flashpoints.
Thanks very much, Amanda. Glad to be with you.
You were in Lebanon for 2 weeks to assess the damage and advise the Lebanese government on how to respond to this devastating oil spill. You're considered an environmental expert on the subject. You've been studying the effects of the Exxon Valdez disaster in Alaska's Prince William Sound ever since it happened in 1989. Can you start by giving us your assessment of the damage from this Lebanese spill?
Yeah, you bet. It's quite extensive, as one might expect. 15,000 tons, by the way, is about 4 million gallons thereabout. Exxon Valdez, the official estimate of the volume spilled, was about three times that size, maybe 45,000 tons, although most of us that know the Exxon Valdez spill well feel that it was probably twice that size. Regardless, the official estimate was about 45,000 tons. The Lebanese spill, the best handle we have on it is maybe 15,000 tons actually went into the water, another 20 to 25,000 tons, the remainder of the fuel in the tank farm at the power station, burned, and it created this enormous atmospheric pollution. There was this plume of particulate hydrocarbon smoke and such that went for 50 or 60 miles to the north. As well, it rained oil droplets within about a 5 kilometer radius around the power station. The Israelis hit it twice, one night and then the successive night, to make sure they had finished the job. So a third of what Exxon Valdez was, however, certainly a major marine oil spill by global standards. It is fuel oil that was going to run the generators at the power plant. This is really thick, gooey, viscous stuff. It's different than crude oil. It behaves different in the water than crude oil does. And when it gets onto the shoreline on rocks and things like this, it basically asphalts the surfaces, and it's darn difficult to get off.
Could you describe what you saw on the beach there itself? Is there anything left to rescue in terms of living things?
No, the shoreline impact was significant. We estimated well over 100 kilometers of shoreline in Lebanon alone. Most of the intertidal life in that area and shoreline life was killed, and that's, you know, invertebrates and algae and things like that. This is very thick fuel oil, and a little bit evaporated in the first week or two, and then a lot of it just sank right to the seabed. So there is extensive seabed contamination. Greenpeace had some dive videos done that are just off the charts. There's large amounts of this thick, goopy oil laying right on the seabed in the eastern Mediterranean.
Now, the Palm Islands Nature Reserve, just off the coast there near Tripoli, the home to many endangered sea turtles. Can you talk about what's happened to them or what will happen to them?
We actually went out to Palm Island near the northern border with Syria. It's their only marine nature reserve in Lebanon. We traveled out there via boat. There's still a sea and air blockade that the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, has over Lebanon, and we were advised not to make this trip because of the security risk. But we did anyway, and there are about 17 loggerhead sea turtle nests on this one sandy beach stretch there. This island was really hit hard by the oil as it flowed north. There's still large patches of oil on the shoreline. However, the Nature Reserve staff got out there about 2 weeks ago and removed a lot of the heavy contamination on the sand beach, right where the turtle nests were. And the eggs are just now hatching. the young turtles, when they dig their way to the surface and, you know, in the night and come down to the surf, they'll be fine on the sand beach as long as it doesn't recontaminate. But the concern is once they get into the water, they will be exposed to surface slicks that are still moving in the area.
One of UNESCO's World Heritage Sites is the town of Byblos, 22 miles north of Beirut. Can you talk about the situation there?
You know, Byblos is a fascinating place. It was just hammered with oil. There was several hundred tons of this oil. It's probably a foot thick, and some literally a foot thick of this heavy, black, stinky fuel oil all over this ancient Phoenician harbor. And the other interesting thing about Byblos, it's not just a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It is purported to be the oldest site of continuous human occupation anywhere in the world. In fact, this month, they were going to celebrate their 7,000th anniversary of continuous human occupation at this site, and boom, the war happens, the oil spill. Yeah, it was a real unfortunate thing that these precious cultural sites, as well as the environmental injury, that these things got hit hard by this too. And I have to say that all of this was unnecessary. You know, this achieved no military strategic objective for the Israelis, period.
What about the fishing industry? Can you talk about how many Lebanese people are affected now and could be affected for years to come by this contamination?
It's extremely important, not only to the 30,000 fishermen that bring in this harvest, but also the people there that rely on it for food. Even now that there's the sea and air blockade, they're starting to venture out real close to shore, within a kilometer or so of shore. They will not go further than that for fear of being attacked, which is certainly a possibility, if not a probability. So the fish production has gone way down. But as well, the other problem, of course, is with the oil spill. There's a lot of consumer concern about buying and eating potentially contaminated product. If there was a population level effect on the fish populations themselves, which could happen, we certainly saw that here in Exxon Valdez. To get a better handle on the whole environmental impact of this spill, we'll know much more in about 2 or 3 months, by the end of the year.
And that's the voice of Rick Steiner. He's a professor at the University of Alaska and member of the IUCN Commission on Environmental, Economic, and Social Policy. Rick Steiner, you have not only advised the Lebanese government on how to respond to this disaster, you've also written to Israel's Prime Minister Olmert. And in that letter, you wrote that this Jie attack was, quote, a malicious intent to inflict widespread environmental and economic damage, unquote. What happened exactly in the attack on the power plant?
The Israelis were systematically targeting infrastructure, roads, bridges, the airport tank farm out there. 40,000 tons of kerosene went up in smoke out at the Beirut airport. Part of their intent, apparently, obviously, with hitting the tank farm at GA, they could have accomplished their military objective there by knocking out the power grid without taking down the tank farm. Instead, they attacked the tank farm, which had just been topped off with fuel oil just days before the war began. All these tanks were full. And then when the Lebanese officials put out the first fire from the first night attack, they came back another night and finished the job, and the entire tank farm went up either in smoke or into the water. The tank farm was only less than 100 meters away from the Mediterranean, and it was obvious that an attack on this tank farm would likely, if not certainly, cause a major oil spill disaster in the eastern Mediterranean. I think, and I've looked at the international laws of war, there's a Geneva Convention prohibition against causing unnecessary long-term environmental harm in war. There's also an International Criminal Court at The Hague statute that says thou shalt not, and if you do, it could constitute a war crime to inflict intentional, long-term, and severe environmental damage in the prosecution of war. Therefore, I asked Prime Minister Olmert to participate and have the Israeli government participate in an independent international inquiry about the legal aspects of this attack, as well to contribute and establish a $1 billion U.S. dollar Eastern Mediterranean oil spill restoration fund that would be used for compensating the governments for all cleanup and response and damage assessment costs that they've incurred, number one. Number two, to compensate the people that have lost income, and that's mainly fishermen and the tourism industry, which is one of Lebanon's primary industries, which is ultimately linked to their clean, white, sandy beaches. And then the third use of this fund would be to conduct a restoration program for the Eastern Mediterranean. And let me also point out that it's not just Lebanon, of course, that is impacted by this, but also Syria. There's going to be contamination up off of Turkey, likely Cyprus. This is a multinational Eastern Mediterranean incident. This was not collateral damage. This seemed to many of us to be an intentional desire to inflict long-term environmental damage to the Eastern Mediterranean. We just can't be doing that here in the 21st century, period.
Was this a war crime, in your opinion?
I strongly feel that it probably was a war crime, but what I'd like to see is an independent inquiry taking testimony and looking at it thoroughly, very rigorously with regard to the international laws of war, both the Geneva Convention and the International Criminal Court, which, by the way, of course, the U.S. and I don't believe Israel either recognize the latter. And if it is not, then we need to amend and strengthen those provisions in the Geneva Convention that address environment and make it very, very clear that you shall not do this in war.
And what else did you say in the letter?
Well, certainly I expressed condolences for the loss of life and property on both sides of the border during the war, and that we've got to find better ways of resolving disputes, number one. Number two, it was my conclusion that I think the Israeli attack on the GA power plant likely violated international laws of war. And I said this in all humility, that I am certainly not taking sides in the conflict. I really don't care if it was an Israeli helicopter firing the missiles or Hezbollah or if the Pope fired the missiles. I do not care. The action itself was wrong. It was unnecessary. And we've got to do better about preventing this kind of thing in the future. It achieved no military objective whatsoever.
Do you expect a response from the Israeli Prime Minister?
I'm not sure. I suspect that they will take this all into consideration. I know they're reeling from all the international condemnation of how this war was handled. They're also reeling from internal Israeli criticism. But I wanted to make certain that the environmental aspect of this war was right in there as well. And let me also just say that the oil spill caused by this war is only one component of the environmental impact of the war. But there's many other things. They bombed a milk plant in Baalbek that could have spilled ammonia. It's just being assessed right now. They bombed a glass factory, a refinery. They hit a plastics factory that could have released things like ethylene glycol and chlorine and vinyl chloride. There's a lot of unexploded ordnance laying around.
Well, this is a very dramatic situation, this disaster in the center of the war zone. And it seems to finally be getting some media attention, thankfully, especially since it's about oil, which seems to carry its own sort of obsessive political weight. But do you find people saying to you now this is less important than the human scale?
Certainly war is hell on people, on infrastructure, and on the environment. All three of those have to be considered in context with one another. There's a lot of focus, certainly, on the people that were killed, the people that were injured, the displaced refugees. That's huge. There's no question about it. South Beirut is in rubble, absolute collapsed rubble, similar to Dresden after World War II. You know, it's totally destroyed. So they're going to move all that out and build a new South Beirut city. They're going to have to, and that's exactly what Hezbollah, with Iranian money, is planning on doing. But one cannot forget the environmental impact of wars, and this happens in every war that we've ever seen. I've got a lot of people that are starting to be concerned about the environmental disaster caused along with the humanitarian, economic, and social disaster. And the United States needs to really take this seriously, because the Middle East crisis is a huge distraction and drain on where we should be paying a lot of attention environmentally globally. We've got a lot of very serious problems with the global environment these days that are slipping to the sideline because of these conflicts in places like the Middle East.
How can people see your reports or get more information on the work that you're doing, Rick Steiner?
The NGO in Beirut called Green Line has a good website on what they've been doing. They've been the main active NGO following this whole thing, trying to do the beach cleanups, etc. You could go to the IUCN website, International Union for the Conservation of Nature.
Well, I want to thank you, Rick Steiner, professor at the University of Alaska and member of the IUCN Commission on Environment, Economic, and Social Policy. Thank you so much for your good work in Lebanon and for being with us today on Flashpoints.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks very much for having me, Amanda.